This podcast is in partnership with Design Biennale Rotterdam, Phoenix Museum, Lack of Guidance, Margreet Olsthoorn, New Institute and Rotterdam Partners, as they all share the common goal to create awareness, share opinions and empower creative growth.
I think my best ideas or my best designs always kind of got born out of doubt, I would say. How do I want to be approached? How do I want to receive feedback? How do I want to receive criticism? And that's what I go with. In the end, like, it will be so boring if you found your purpose, because what's left to do?
In today's episode, I talk with Dennis van der Broek, a talented spatial designer whose work spans theater, fashion and art. Dennis shares how he builds immersive spaces, the importance of collaboration and why having a personal cocoon fuses creativity and self-reflection. Tune in to hear about his journey and insights on making meaningful spaces. Today, I'm sitting in front of Dennis. Thank you for having me. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Can you describe a little bit where we are?
Yeah, definitely. We are in Rotterdam. We are at my second home. That's how I call it. It's the studio, but it's also more of like a living room away from home, I guess. And this is where I work a lot, where I am like 2-3 days in a week to think. And yeah, that's where we are. Yeah.
What kind of topics do we think about?
Ooh, big things, little things. If I have deadlines, I'm always here. If I need a break, I'm here. I watch a lot of YouTube videos here. Yeah, and I don't know if I'm like need to contemplate and like, I don't know, away from meetings and physical encounters that we constantly have, I'm just going to be here. It's like a cocoon, really. Like, be me, myself, and I, kind of. Yeah.
Sounds like a good spot.
And it's a perfect spot. Yeah.
Would you recommend everyone to have such a place?
Definitely. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it is very important that you can be alone. I think that is super important. And for me, at least, it's always been super important to have some me time. So this spot is perfect for that. Yeah. Yeah.
So the question I ask everyone in the podcast, how is life treating you at the moment?
Life is treating me well. Although I'm slightly tired, like I just said, we've been traveling quite a lot for work, which is always kind of a heavy attack on your body. And now we're kind of like gearing up for Fashion Week. So it's like calm before the storm. We just got a new dog, which is walking around. You hear his little feet. So there's a lot of stuff going on in life, but isn't it always?
Yeah.
And I mean, no, life is treating me really well. Definitely. Yeah.
Good to hear.
Yeah. Mm. I think it's also important to say that when life is going well, to express to other people that life is going well.
Mm-hmm.
I think we tend to find it important to say how busy you are or how rough it is, whereas I think it's also super important to express and talk about when things are going super well.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I'm very happy that you joined the podcast. Because I don't waste eyes so much focused about the other side.
Exactly.
And see that others also struggle.
Yeah.
So, for instance, one of the perspectives which I heard a lot in the past 10 years of my career is that everyone is like, hey, I think I'm a good designer or something else in the profession. I want to travel because others do it as well. I want to see the world, etc.
Mm.
Is traveling for work actually that nice?
Mm. Yes and no. I can remember when I was like younger and I was in the train from like my hometown where I grew up to, I don't know, like Rotterdam or something. I kind of like pictured this life of like, you know, sitting on the phone, traveling with a suitcase. I don't know. I was kind of like mystifying that or romanticizing it. And now we are, like I also said, like privileged enough to do it. I mean, it's great. Like, I love being in other places and meet new people. I absolutely adore that. But it is rough as fuck. Mm. Like, we've like two, like in the last 2 weeks, we've been to Paris, Frankfurt for a day, London for the weekend, and then to Singapore. So it's like, oh, that is insane.
That's insane.
And I mean, that's not normal. Mm. It's not that. That's my life. Thank God. But I really benefit from having like a home base, and I'm a very home based kind of person. Like,
yes,
I live in Antwerp. I mean, I'm very, I find it important to have a, like this space. Again, it's like a sacred space. And I find it way more important than, you know, do that travel lifestyle or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Or I don't consider it to be important for the job. Let me say that. I mean, for us, it's important because obviously everything we do is about the physical spaces. So if we travel to see those spaces and to experience them. But as a concept of like traveling for work, it's not super interesting. Yeah.
So if I would take away the studio from you, basically your cocoon,
that
you said, would you be as thriving in your career as you are now?
I think so, yes. I mean, there are other ways to kind of establish the same feeling. So I do, I fucking hope so that I'm still the same. But I mean, it would cause some sort of a distress, I would say, that I have to find a solution for.
The reason why I ask is because probably a lot of people listen to this and like, yeah, sure, I have a home, but I have no studio.
Exactly.
So how would I manage to find my own cocoon?
I mean, like I said, like I love to drive, for example, like just sit in the car without a purpose and just drive around, which is, I don't know. For me, there's always like I function well, or I come up with the best ideas when I have the double concentration, or like ironing really works because you're doing an activation with one side of your brain and you have the space to think about something else with the other side of your brain. That kind of like double focus is something that really... So it's all, I think it's more finding a way of like getting yourself in a space. I think that is super important. And I don't think it's necessary to have a space. There are literally other ways to go about, I would say. And sometimes this is also frustrating. I have to drive from Antwerp to Rotterdam to be here. I mean, it's not... A lot of people think I'm absolutely mental for doing this. But it's, yeah, it's kind of my autistic way of, I don't know, having certain hubs and certain ways of manifesting moods, I guess.
Sounds quite familiar.
Okay.
I have to say. So yeah. Yes, maybe that's a really...
No, I think a lot of people who are working in... Because, for example, my husband, he's completely different. He stays at home in his room, and he works from home, and he loves it that way. So it's... I mean, I think everybody is different in that sense and needs different things in order to thrive. And that can also change. Like, I'm way more rigid and way more kind of like, this is it, and I need to stick to it. Also, maybe because I'm afraid it will get lost. I think that's also part of it. If I'm really in a struggle with a deadline, there's always one song that I've been listening for the past 10 years, which is Brian Eno, Thursday Afternoon. It's a very ambient song. But I don't know now whether it really comforts me or it is the idea of comfort, you know what I mean? So it's like this idea of going back and forth, but sometimes I have the feeling I need that song, or I need the drive, or I need this hop. And I mean, it's probably made-believe. I made it created.
I don't know. I have the same.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But don't think about it too much, because otherwise it's gone, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, I think... If I hear this, it is also good for me to hear it, because I don't meet so many people and that we talk about these things. But I hear so many things like, well, yeah, absolutely. No,
yeah.
I hope more people will listen to this. And
yeah, definitely.
How much has your motto, go big or go home, done for your career?
Well, it got me here. I still live by that, actually. Like, it's for me, it's on the one hand, it's quite an aggressive motto, maybe, like, ba, 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 ba. But for me, it's more like without compromise, or like doing anything without a compromise. Because my mother always told me, like, if you have an opportunity and you don't do it, or like, make sure you never get regret from anything that you haven't done. So maybe that's kind of like go big or go home. Like, at least, like, it would be great if I could have lived a life and have no, like, regrets about things that I haven't tried or haven't done or haven't dared or haven't generated the opportunity to do it or something. I think that's more go big or go home. It's more like to myself. It's not like it needs to be big or successful. That's not, it's more of like a mantra for myself to remind me of this idea of like, be brave, maybe.
Yeah. I'm happy to hear this because I read another interview. And it was basically 5 questions and the last one, what is your motto? And then this was it.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. But knowing you a bit through other interviews, I'm like, yeah, but he's not like this as a personality. I can't believe it. So it's good for people to hear that it's not an aggressive, bold move to say, let's make the biggest things. It's more about your...
I mean, it is a big thing, but it is maybe something I wish to be, but I'm not. So with manifesting it or saying it, it's partly true.
I am.
That's what I'm thinking now when you're saying like you're not that person, so maybe it's more of me wanting to be that person. I don't know, I think it is something like that. I think it's an easy like shield, like go big or go home, and it's at the same time kind of like for me to remind myself that that's how I want to live my life, and that's sometimes difficult to live, you know.
Is that also maybe relating to a concept like where am I in 10 years and that you are busy?
Yeah, I mean,
like this.
Or? Yeah, I got that question obviously all the time, like from doing or having conversations with friends to my mother to myself. And I think I've always subconsciously knew that I'm doing this to be in it for the long run.
Mm-hmm.
So my pace is relatively slow, I would say. And I think, like, the 10-year goal, like, I think I rather think short-term or no-term, in the sense of, like, yeah, I think 10, like, it's also so abstract or something. Mm-hmm. I'm strategic sometimes, don't get me wrong. Like, if I want something, I'll sometimes strategically make sure it will happen. So it's not like I'm not Mother Teresa or something, but it's not, I don't know, like I'm like a, yeah, my own pace, my own time, and just as, I don't know, stably moving forward or something, rather than that, like the dot on the horizon or something.
When was the moment that you talked about it with your mom, that you realized, like, hey, this motto is like working for me? Or?
I think I always had it. I think when you would ask my mother, she would say that I always had it. I was always quite determined in what I wanted to do, whether it was like going on ballet when I was like 6 and didn't give a shit, got bullied for it, didn't like being bullied, but continued with it anyway. Or when I was in high school and I wanted to go, I knew that I was going to theater school, and everybody, and I was like in a very like rigid kind of like, what's a name, you know, that kind of like bourgeois kind of semi-bourgeois people, trying bourgeois people. And like, yeah, they were like, yeah, sure, you go, sure. Like to the theater, you're, yeah. And I just knew it was going to happen, and it happened. And I'm not saying this like, that it was easier. Like, but it's just like, I don't know, there was kind of like a subconscious determination that I'm super lucky that I have. I'm very aware of the fact that that's something that is extremely comfortable to have. And I think my parents were always stimulating me in whatever it was that I was. So that helped. And like, I don't know. Yeah, it's, I think it's a nature nurture thing. It's a bit of both. I think it was always somehow in me, and then my parents stimulated me, and then, yeah, you build up confidence in a different way than high school, or you know what I mean, like on that. So yeah.
Do you have a lot of confidence?
No, not at all. No, I mean, no. I'm maybe no. I'm confident in certain areas, and I'm super insecure about others, like everybody, I guess.
Mm-hmm. What are you confident in?
I'm confident in collaborating because I know I love people and I like to work with people. So I'm confident in being able to willingly collaborate with people. I'm comfortable in my body, in how I look, in my appearance, I'm married, so I'm super comfortable with my husband. No, but like those things are so important. Like, mm-hmm. I have such a stable kind of like home situation, which is the most important thing, I would say, for me at least. So I'm confident in, and like for within my work, I'm super insecure and confident at the same time. I'm now at a point in my career where I'm like, yes, I've established myself in a way that I wanted to, and I've established in a way that I can say I'm proud of, mm-hmm. of how I got here and where we are. But I'm super insecure about what tomorrow will bring, or the phone call that I had, you know, like it goes, it's so frantic and so schizo in a way. It's not constant, or it's bendable, fluid, it's movable, it's shapeable, sometimes it's numbing, like it's everything at the same time, the confidence and the insecurity. I think you need both, really. I think my best ideas or my best designs always kind of got born out of doubt, I would say. It's also one of the biggest forces in my creative process.
In other interviews, I read that you're quite on the control side.
Yes.
How does it work when you have a lot of doubt, and the best things come from doubt?
Good question. I'm trying to let go. I'm in therapy and I'm trying to let go more, and it's going well. We're making progress. How am I doing that? I mean, I think I've thought that by creating so much control about everything, you can control your own, or you can basically, how do you say it? Like, manipulate your own creative process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that doesn't work. I kind of like realized that along the way. But like, for example, when I have a deadline, I tend to work very hard in the beginning, then become super kind of like victim-y about it. Like, oh, I don't know. My husband hates that period. And then I kind of like force myself towards that deadline, like flirting with the end of the world, basically. And then it's there, which is such a weird process. But I've tried to change it, really. And especially now when I'm like working, obviously, with other people, it's not necessarily always the way to go. But especially still for my theater work, it still happens like that. Like I push it all the way to the end, to the end, to the end. And then I'm like, I have nothing. And then boom, then the idea comes to me. Super stupid. Same?
Same.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. How do you think that's coming? Like, what is that? I cannot decipher it. Like, I don't know what it is.
First thoughts, expectations. that what I do is, in the beginning, you have the feeling like, what I'm gonna do, the project or collaboration, it's massive, it's cool, it's everything that you wanted at that moment, and then you make a lot of to-dos and ideas, sketch, whatever. And at a certain moment, while you're in the process, you notice like, well, there are quite a lot of options.
Yeah.
Writer's block, how am I gonna manage this? And then you're gonna wine and dine, and then your partner indeed is like, okay, come on, dude, just push. Yeah. And if you find a way that you say to yourself, like, okay, but at least take a step forward, not backwards, then it really starts to, yeah.
But I have the feeling I really need to, like, smother in this. I really need to be like, I'm exaggerating, but it really, like kid, almost like, I don't know what to do, you know, like, I really have that, and I feel sad for myself, and then I'm like, and now it's happening, now I realized that it was just a one hit wonder moment, you know. I need that insecurity.
Insecurity. I do. It's
money, huh? It's
because otherwise it feels like the other project that you did and you didn't grow for.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, I don't find it healthy. I think it's also kind of like super destructive to yourself.
Yes.
And I'm also like, fucking grow up. Like, you're not 20 anymore. And I don't know. So I think I'm in the midst of this process of changing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to change it because I do find it also something that is, for me, like, I don't know. I would like to move in a more constructive and a more, because I'm working with so much cool people, I think that helps, like, the input, and also with my team, like, it's so nice to talk with them because they take me out of my head and they like kind of like force me to, okay, so what are we doing? Da-da-da.
Yeah.
So I really benefit from that. I learn a lot from them in that sense, like, to get out of that, like, isolated victim-y kind of.
You mentioned that you somehow like to flirt with ideas and collaborations and such. A quote, not from you, but the Performance Art Theater Academy in Maastricht.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the website, it says this, or... No, it's not personal, but what you learn during the studies at the Performance Art Theater Academy is to flirt with the visual arts, film, music, and literature, and to train the expressiveness of your body and your voice. So my question to you is, how much of a flirter are you as a person? And how does this as a network skill help you?
Oh, I'm the worst. I'm a bad flirt, like, really bad. When people are flirting with me, or when that still happens, I never noticed it. I don't know, I get very clumsy, I guess. In network, I used to be very good at it. In my early days, I was very good. I liked it. I liked the thrill of it. And now, since the past 5-10 years or something, I cannot sometimes force myself to do it. And it's also like, maybe now I'm more confident about my work, about the work. And I'm like, let the work do the talking. And that confidence, that is something I gained over the years, obviously. So maybe I didn't have that when I was still like networking. But I mean, there's for me a big difference in like networking, or like, I always like to meet new people and have conversations with people that I don't know. So is that then that? So I rather don't approach it as networking, as just meeting cool people.
Mm-hmm.
I try to be super curious about everything, and call it networking, but I'm more sort of some sort of like interested in the people. Like, yeah, of course that's network, but I'm not very like going to a party and like, oh, there's that person, let's go. I'm not doing that.
No. So maybe also for people listening, because you worked with quite some big names in theater world and
sure.
It's out there. So like, But the question is maybe for people like, yeah, but why is that, like, your work speaks for itself?
I mean, yeah, for me it is. It's about the work. Yeah. Like, I'm not interested. I mean, I'm...
Would your tip be like, and just do what you love and...
Well, do the work, like work, work on your craft, whatever it is. And I think, like, especially now in today's world, like, we are so occupied with everything that is outside of us. And I think it's, for me, the other way around, really. Like, if you start from 100 billion Instagram followers, but you've got nothing to sell, then sure, like, so I'd rather do it the other way around. Start with something that is true to me and that is durable, because I know, since I've been working so hard for, like, what I'm doing, I know that I'm ready for everything that is coming, but it's because I did the work. And for everybody, that also has a different balance, I think, in life. But for me, it is about that. That's the core of everything. It's about, like, that's, I mean, I find it funny that you use the theater school quote, but, like, there's a lot to say about that period of my life. But one thing I did learn during my time at the theater school was the idea of craftsmanship. And that's something maybe it's old school, but I really believe in that. It's about, I'm doing a craft and I want to be the best in my craft, not for the world, but for myself, because I'm interested in getting better and evolving and moving into different fields. Like, that's what I'm interested in. And if that generates whatever, sure. Like, of course, then we're sitting here doing this podcast, then I'm more than happy to. But I want to talk about the work and not about, you know, I like this idea of a podcast because it's just talking. It's about the conversation. It's about dialogue. It's not about face, like, outside appearances. It's about core and work.
Yeah, and full. Okay, let's do some do or die question.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Always know what time it is or never know what time?
Always know what time it is. Always.
Is there a special reason? We'll come on.
Control. Like, I need to be in control about the time is money. No. Time is...
I know there's a difference.
Time is so precious for me. Yeah. And toxic. Time is also toxic.
Yeah. We'll dive into it later. Knowing the planning of your whole day, but during the day not know what time it is, or know what time it is, but not know what's next on the agenda?
None happening. I know what is happening this entire week from hour to hour, really. So, yeah, that.
Beyoncé or Tina Turner?
Tina Turner.
Maastricht or London?
London, definitely.
Rotterdam or Antwerp?
Antwerp now, I guess, yeah.
Theater or fashion?
Poof. Both.
Theater or spatial design?
Spatial design in theater?
You're quite a cheat.
Yeah, a bit. Sorry.
Okay. Full-time commission-based projects or full-time autonomous artist?
Both. Sorry.
It's just a teaser.
No, but I think these questions, this is exactly how I felt during studies or something that I had to choose. And I want to do both. And
I know.
Doing both. So if it's either this or that, I won't be doing it at all. Yes.
I just make the...
No, but I think it's good, like...
Okay. Personally, I have the biggest fun making this.
Yeah, I get that.
Okay, but it's also the summary of all the things that you...
Of course.
Okay. From now on, only play performances or only do spatial design?
Spatial design.
Never in control, but never be forgotten. Or always in control, but forgotten.
Never in control, but not be forgotten, I guess.
Mm. Continue as a creative director at your own studio or immediately be creative director at Bureau Betak?
Oh no, my own studio.
Never have to worry about money ever again or die poor but have a statue at a place of your choosing?
I don't care about the statue.
It's more a gimmick.
Money then.
It has to do with the concept of being forgotten.
Oh no, money.
Okay.
I'll buy that statue with the money.
What's Tina Turner doing for you?
I think she's like, honestly, the core of everything.
Mm.
My parents were obsessed with her. So it was my first cultural thing inside, I guess. I don't know, I got obsessed with her when I was like 4. And I did like whole concerts in my grandparents' living room, lip-syncing, like the whole concert. They couldn't leave. They had to stay. So I think, I don't know what, I think like now she became something that is kind of like became a symbol of, I don't know, like my upbringing, my parents, and kind of the bridge to where I am now and the life that I made for myself. So she kind of like become the symbolic statue, if you will, for that, I guess. And I think she's great. I mean, rest in peace. But like her songs are still, I don't know, it sparkles something from my childhood, I guess.
And do you also take this with you in your work? For instance, in the concepts or something that people can see?
Oh, not really. It's a super private connection or association, I would say, that a lot of people don't get, which is fine.
Mm.
It's, yeah, not private in a sense, like, I don't want to talk about it, but more like it's super privat. Like, it's, yeah.
Well, let's not talk about it.
Never. It's fine.
What does Alexander McQueen mean to you?
Oh, he was a genius. I mean, tragic, but genius. I don't know. I think for me, like, he made me realize that theater and fashion are the same in the context of shows and life experiences. Like when I was insecure about like fashion is so cool, but I'm in theater school, I always watched his stuff. And I was like, yeah, but this is what I do or what I'm trying to do in the classroom at the theater school. So he kind of like helped me be confident in this idea of that those worlds are, they can coexist next to each other. And I mean, like, also, the work itself is great. And I think he had such a power of visualizing the dark side of life in a both morbid but also romantic way, which is very hopeful for me and very comforting in a weird way.
And in which way?
Well, I mean, there's beauty in the darkness, I would say. And I think it's so brave that you can explore that in your work, which is something that I'm not necessarily drawn to, or like it's not natural for me to go there. But I think that is maybe a desire that I want to have, which is fine if it stays a desire, by the way. Like, it's not something that I'm hunting down, but that's something that is exemplary for me in his work. I mean, I saw that exhibition, and that's also like, I saw his exhibition, for example, at the V&A in London, and I was like, okay, So fashion can also be in a museum. Like, it was, he connected a lot of dots for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, it's still to this day one of the best exhibitions I've seen in my life. Like, it was crazy. It was such an experience and a very, like, 360 internally, externally, like, everything got triggered. So, and I'm not the only one. Like, also people who didn't know anything about him or mm-hmm. didn't care about fashion, yeah, they were like, what the fuck is this? So it communicates. And that's, I think, that's why I do what I do. Like, it's about the community. He didn't stop necessarily at creating a dress with a pair of scissors. Yeah. He wanted to communicate or transcend the message to the wearer or to the guests or to... And I think that is super inspiring for me because I don't care about designing behind my computer. It's about what happens after with that design.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something I learned from him or... gravitate towards when I saw his work.
I admire him quite a lot as well. All the documentaries, whatever.
Tragic. Oh, it's
crazy.
It's someone who also couldn't deal with life. So it feels also, that's why I'm so careful with my words, because it also feels so like we think he's a genius because he could like create beauty out of darkness, but that was his world. Like, it's not that he had a choice.
Yeah.
And that's something I don't know him, but it's my perception of studying his work and the documentaries. So I find it difficult to like, especially talk about the dark side of his work, because I'm like, I can look at it and think something about it, but he was in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it literally killed him in the end. So I think it's a fragile conversation.
Would you, for instance, because he was seen by many as a genius, but to be a genius like him, you needed to be in the dark. Have you ever thought about it, or do you want to be more in the dark to excel your career?
No. I think that's not. No.
I think you know, but for instance, for people who are waiting.
Oh, no, it's not that. Like, there's this, I think, stereotype of an artist should suffer, and I definitely don't. I strongly disagree with that. I think David Bowie once said something very clever about that I cannot recite at this point, but it's about like if you're living in the now, in your body, in your, like, in your universe, that's where the inspiration is. And if you're seeking it outside of yourself, it's never gonna fuel you, I guess. So it shouldn't be the end goal, like, or let's go to the darkness. I mean, no, when it, of course, we all have dark times, and then different work will emerge for sure. But
it's not per se like a personal question to you, because
I get it.
I think you're.
No, but I think there is this idea, when I studied at the theater school as well, like, it should be tough. Like, I said it in the beginning, no? Like, you should be busy. It should be hard. Where I'm like, yeah, I mean, sure, sometimes it is, but it's not, it shouldn't be always that, like, or it becomes like a pose or something to strive for, where I'm like, don't strive for that. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's good to hear from you.
Go in the other direction, please.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, because so many times you see these biographies and whatsoever of the suffering.
Mm.
But it's good to hear from people like you who say, like, no, please don't. Be happy with yourself.
Yeah.
And just work.
Yeah, and also go find that happiness if you're not. Like, go to therapy, go to yoga, the fuck you're doing. Like, seek for that and not seek the other thing.
Thank you for the advice.
Yeah, no, I really strongly believe in that.
Hey, you worked at Bureau Betak.
Yes.
How was that?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Best time. Yeah, no, I loved it. It was the perfect way to kind of like end my triptych of studied theater, did a master in fine art, and then worked at Bureau Betak. I mean, it was the best possible time in my life, I guess, in the sense for that period, the opportunities that I got were crazy when you look at it. I bluffed my way in, like literally I never opened a computer program that they worked with, never properly designed a fashion show on that scale, and started as a senior designer in New York. I've never been to New York before, so it was like, it was just, and then, I mean, I loved that. There was only one moment where I was like in the plane to New York watching Sex and the City in the plane. I was like, holy fuck, it's like, we're going, like, this is it. It's like, make or break kind of thing. And then, I mean, I just went with it and I had the best time and I met amazing people and I still really love them. I'm in contact with a lot of people from that period. Like one of my assistants I met during working there. And I love how in fashion, how loyal they are to the people that they work with, which is definitely not common in fashion, let me tell you that. So I had the best time. I learned so much. And I also learned so much from what I wanted different, and not in a bad way, but just in a different way. And I only got that clarity because I had the chance to look into experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
for people who are now applying and in that kind of engine, how do you get bold, push your way in?
I mean, it was so stupid. Like, I was studying at theater school and I knew the company through inspiration, I guess. And it became kind of like a running joke where I kind of applied every year or like send my resume. But I knew that nobody, like, I would never get a response. But because, you know, why would they? And then I think, like, at one point, they just sent a message back. I think I've never asked. I should ask. Should ask them why, like, but I don't know if they know.
I would love it. Because you also once replied somewhere else where you send a bottle with a letter.
Yeah, that was my first. It's so funny. Do you see that bottle in the closet? The plastic one?
Yeah.
Like, somebody who wanted to work here sent me that bottle.
Oh, yeah.
And she said to me, this is a shout out to her. She said to me, I read somewhere that you applied for an internship sending a bottle. Letter in a bottle while I'm doing the same, and now the ball is in your court. That's what she wrote. And I was like, bitch, that's good. That's really good. I took that.
Was she hired?
No, unfortunately not. But that, no. I did that. Like, why not?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, different times as well, like, you know, but I thought you need to grasp people's attention, no?
Mm-hmm. And that comes back to the big or no, don't show up.
Yeah, go big or go home. Yeah. Like, try it. Like, yeah. And don't give up in that sense, or don't let...
No regrets.
Yeah, or don't let it get you down or something. Also, a no. Like, I mean, of course, we're now talking about the bottle, the intern, Bureau Betak. But the shit that didn't happen for me, like, the list is longer than you know what I mean? Like, it comes both, like, it to get the yeses, you need shitloads of no's first. And in these kind of, I mean, like, in talks or whatever, it's always about the success, whatever that quote-unquote success, whatever that means. Or the big names, but like, it's the no's you get in order to get one yes. It's and nobody really talks, or like, not a lot of people talk about that. And I think that's super important. Like, I got to know, like, last week, you know, like, it still happens. It's not a guarantee for anything.
Well, this was also quite an interlude because I want to dig and find those, like, how do you deal with failure or criticism?
I'm not really good in receiving compliments. I'd rather have feedback, I would say. How do I deal with it? Suck it up, be sad for a day and move on?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm not good at that, honestly. Like, if I worked on a play with a director for months and we get a bad review, I'll take it super personal.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they say something about the set that's not good or it's not working or whatever, then I'm pissed and I'm sad. Like, really, still. Yeah.
To what extent?
For me, it's the other way around. Like, I should very much more allow myself to enjoy what I'm, like, or to be proud and to own what I do. Like, the show of Diesel was such a big turning point for me. Like, we did that show and the show was happening and everything was, I mean, due to circumstances, everything was going great and the show was happening and I couldn't watch the show. Like, I literally went outside, smoked like 4 cigarettes,
mm-hmm.
walked around and didn't enjoy that moment. And then I was like, and I talked about it with my friends after lunch. They're like, my best friends came and we were at lunch after. And I was like, high as a kite, but like not in a good way. And I was like, shit, that's so stupid that I didn't mm-hmm. enjoy or took the moment in. So I'm trying to do that more, really, to enjoy what I'm doing, nonetheless, what people are thinking or what I'm thinking even. Like, just enjoy the moment of, like, accomplishing something with your team and with the people you're collaborating with. That's already a reason to celebrate something.
Do you already know a little bit why it is? Because for me, again, it feels quite...
I think it's never good enough, really. Yeah. That's kind of that's my struggle in life. Like, it's bigger than the work. But yeah, no, I'm always questioning myself and be harsh on... Like, there was a long time. I'm getting better at that now. Again, therapy, go for it. It was always about the next thing, about faster, better, bum, 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 bum. And now I'm finally, like, after I think a year and a half, I'm really trying to be more in the moment, present, enjoy, instead of like what you're saying about like the 10-year question, like, let's see what happens tomorrow.
Yes. Because I was asked the same a couple of weeks ago, like, okay, you do this podcast, what kind of questions? I said, well, I try to do different, but yeah, how much different can you be?
Mm.
Yeah, and then the 10 years question, said, yeah, but for me personally, it doesn't even work. I'm just in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I think, I mean, 2 years ago, I would have had like a full pitch for the 10-year thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I do have ambition, and I do know what things I want to still want to explore. So it's not that it's not a passive, let's see. No, it's super active,
mm-hmm.
but it's not so much like striving for something that you basically don't know what you're, like, running faster than your legs can, and like you don't know where you're running towards. So I'd rather do a quick sturdle towards something that I know rather than do a sprint to God knows where.
Mm-hmm.
Bad metaphor, but the point comes across, I guess.
So would you say you're feeling free?
That's big. That's deep. Sometimes, I guess. I don't think the answer is yes, and I don't, because it's such a big question and it can be interpreted and integrated in your life in so many
ways. I know.
Do you feel free?
Well, let's narrow it down if it works. So you don't have special expectations or milestones at the horizon, but you have the feeling of always growing and learn more.
Evolving, yeah, for sure.
Can imagine that a lot of people have the feeling like, I'm now at this age, 40, midlife crisis, 20, 30, FOMO.
Mm.
You have a different concept.
No, I mean, I had that FOMO as well. Like, when I looked at the age of Rihanna, I'm still going crazy. Like, how is that possible? You know what I mean? Like, of course, I have that as well. But it doesn't get you anywhere. Or, like, it doesn't get me anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing, yeah, I don't know, I've always said that, but, like, it's also, like, a lot of the things that I've said, they're a way of convincing myself. Like, I like to say, like, the only thing you have is your own intuition and your own gut feeling. But I'm basically meaning, like, that I need to listen to my gut feeling and intuition more. Or you know what I mean? Like, so that's how I kind of, the FOMO is irrelevant, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're busy with FOMO rather than trying to not FOMO, but do the work and get to, I don't know, it's so much more interesting if you find the liberty or the freedom to think from opportunities within than seeking something outside of you. Because the world is way bigger than all of a sudden. And I mean, I still have that sometimes. I don't get, like, when I see something and I'm like, oh shit, I wasn't there. Mm. Or like, oh shit. You know, of course, I'm not, but I think everybody has it, but I think it's good to not let it defeat you or, like, get you down.
Mm. In
the sense of, like, that it's kind of taking over from what it is. I think it's normal. Everybody has FOMO.
Oh, yeah.
I know Brianna has FOMO. First thing, she probably won't, but I like to believe she has.
I think it's quite healthy to have it. It's indeed, like, go forward.
Yeah, exactly. Or, like,
run in circles or go backwards.
Mm.
Because in this question, it's also, since I started, I get a lot of emails and requests, like, super cliche, which, and it's very valid, but
cliches are the best.
How can I find my purpose? Because Simon Sinek says it. Mm. And I'm like, yeah, I don't have it. For sure not. I have no idea where this is going. Like, you have ideas and ambitions, but I have no idea.
But I like these big words, like freedom, purpose. I mean, of course, they're part of, like, life, I assume. But, like, it's so big. Like, it's so big. You cannot, mm-hmm. like, it's not, it's, for me, it's numbing, those mm-hmm. words, like freedom
mm-hmm.
or, like, success.
I fully agree. Yeah.
And it's holding me back rather than it's giving me anything. Purpose, like, let's find it
mm.
by doing something, then think about, like, what is my purpose, like, yeah, just try something and see if you like it and
mm-hmm.
take it from there, really. Like, I really tried, I mean, also subconsciously, like, now when I'm looking back, like, I also did things to at least have a confirmation, like, okay, this is not what I want. Like, Bureau Betak is a good example. Best time of my life. But I knew, like, okay, this is not kind of,
mm-hmm.
I love it. And I, you know, that it's not about bad or good, but, like, this is not for me. Same with theater school. I basically, with all my studies, like, okay, you learn something by doing it. You take the things in your little backpack, what you can need. And that's how you fight. I mean, in the end, like, it will be so boring if you found your purpose, because what's left to do? Then you're done.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm like, let's continue. Like, you know, like, mm. move on. Think about it long and hard, but continue.
Mm-hmm. Like, probably because a lot of people, when they start something, the expectation is like, hey, do finish.
Mm.
So, but if you don't finish, or like you and I, that you do this study, you do this, you have no idea of sometimes why, but it's indeed in the backpack. And then all of a sudden, later on, you'll find a crossover between many things, like for you and me. So,
and I mean, it's not like I don't fucking know what I'm doing either. Like, it's a way, but it's mm-hmm. not, I think it's also such like a farce to believe that there's a way. There's no way. Everybody has, all the ways are good, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, if I would give my full trajectory to you, like, it would probably not work for you. Thank God. You know what I mean? Like, find your own way. I mean, the world is so, how do you say it, like, oversaturating with everything. So sometimes that's why, like, living in big cities for me was also challenging. Like, I need some peace of mind to at least hear my own thoughts, really. And at least when I think of something, have the idea only if it's for a minute that I'm a genius and that I know I'm not. But, like, I need to have those satisfactional moments in order to continue.
Even here the same, I live 1 year in Amsterdam, 15 in Rotterdam. If I'm in Amsterdam, I feel at home.
Ah, yeah, okay, yeah.
I can't handle what happens on a square meter.
Yeah, yeah,
it's,
no.
It's
yeah.
Like, come on, give me peace.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, exactly.
Okay, so, but you live in Antwerp.
Yes.
And you're married.
Yeah.
How much do you discuss with your partner about work?
A lot, obviously. Like, he's a visual artist. He works a lot of in 3D. So he works in a complete different medium. But I mean, yeah, of course, like, we are equally obsessed with what we do. So it's also kind of like one of the pillars of the relationship in a good way. Like, we don't work together. We never, that's not for us. And I think we're both equally obsessed and equally have the desire to detach ourselves from it. So we're also like, have a lot of like, and now we don't talk about work. But yeah, constantly. Like, it's funny. Yeah, I never go to him, or not often, with an idea that is not fully finished yet. Because I'm always, he's super critical, which I love. Like, I wouldn't have it any other way. But sometimes we're not, like, ready for that yet. And he's always super, he's so honest. He's way more honest and more, well, not more, but like, he's so, like, authentic in his process. And I'm way more, I think also, I don't know, it's like, he has a different, like, I don't know, I don't know what I want to say, but like, I think he's way more direct. That's what I know. He really doesn't overanalyze, and he's super, and I love that. Because I need that sometimes more than this overthinking and like, so we have, I think we have a lot of like, he's working on something new now and I looked at it yesterday for the first time, you know, so it's great. I mean, I love to share that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, super important.
So it's quite a big support.
Yeah. The best support.
Hey, who do you support?
Who do I support? I hope my family and friends. I think that's most important, people to support, I guess. Yeah.
And you have a team?
Yeah.
How do you assemble a team? You mentioned they're not employees, but freelancers?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I'm trying to, like I already said, like, build my universe in a very slow pace.
Mm.
So it takes a lot of time. We are now with like 5. In and out, like, dun-dun-dun. And it took me, like, I started in 2018-19, so it's like, it took me, like, 6 years, 7 years to get here, you know? But again, I wouldn't have it any other way, and it takes time. Everything takes time, and I love working with them, and the idea of, I mean, the structure of a company for me, I mean, I don't know. I'm still, this is me thinking out loud. But on the one hand, I do think this company structure and like trying to own people is something that is so outdated.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the creative landscape, like, it doesn't really add up. Like, everybody is a freelancer. Everybody dips in, dips out. So why, like, you know, there's this own, like, thing of owning people that is something that's really disturbing to me. But I do like this idea of like community and collectiveness. But I'm like, yeah, we are kind of like a collective. but we're also not. And I don't know. So I'm still debating on, you want to also support them, you know, and have like secure them with work. Like, I feel extremely responsible for them and for like getting work and like pay them well. You know, I find that also in, like, that's why I don't do interns, because I mean, of course, everybody, but like, I have someone now who has a gap year who's assisting us, and he just gets paid for it, because like, it wouldn't make sense to like, so I'm thinking about all of these things in a super, or I'm trying to be in it, to think about these things in a super transparent way. But I still haven't figured out how to, probably eventually I do need to become a company. But yeah, so it's, I don't know, for now it serves me like this, and I think it serves them as well, hopefully. No, I know, and we are talking about it, and if there's something, then I'm super open to think about or like change it. But for now, they're doing their own stuff. They all have practices that are super interesting, and they bring that to the studio as well. So it's like, it's like they do amazing work on their own. Like, why would I be like, you work for me now? Like, I don't, I don't care. I really don't care. Like, I much more have them flourish in their own ways and then come back to do a project with me. I don't know. I feel like collaborating with them instead of like, they work for me. Like, I find the word assistance also in, I find it all difficult. This term, like these terms, or like the vocabulary that goes with it. So yeah, I'm just trying to do it like this, and let's see how far it gets us. But I've been working like with most of them for already like 3.5 years. Like, it's a long time for freelance. You know what I mean? Like, so I must do something well, I guess, and something must work between us, you know?
Well, let me, this is not a question. This is a small quote from a magazine that I wrote, which personally I liked a lot. Okay. So this is more a little bit of a credit to you. In the Numero magazine from January this year, you mentioned, I don't really believe in hierarchy or top-down creative processes. My work only exists by the grace of collaboration, by the fact that every voice matters and is being heard. In the end, the best idea always wins.
Yeah.
I like to approach the people I am working with a soft approach, in order for me to have a razor-sharp approach to all the artistic elements. I strongly believe that when you create a team in which everyone feels seen, you will get the most inspiring space.
Still completely agree with everything. Yeah.
I like it very much. And it's more a message maybe also to people in same positions.
Yeah.
Because like you mentioned, in this creative industry, it's sometimes quite fucked up.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is completely fucked up.
Yeah.
Definitely. And there's so much like still abuse of power all over the place. So, and I mean, I said this in the context of that we are now doing the creative direction of Weekend Dance, which is an electronic beach festival in Zeebrugge in Belgium. And it's the first time that I'm like creative directing, I mean, put a word on it, whatever. But like, we are trying to create a new concept for that festival. That's basically what we're doing. And we work with a team that is already there, that, so I said it in the context of that, because I was also like invited to become part of their team. And I took my team, like team. And then the only thing you can do for me is let's sit around the table. Like, where are you for? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it is as basic as that. And I think if everybody can pitch in, I mean, to a certain point, obviously, I can be way more like this idea, like the soft approach, like the human approach for me is just super important, because then I can be, I'm super sharp and direct when it comes to the work, like sometimes in an obsessive way, but it's never like on a personal level, because I'm trying to invest also in the people that I work with out of curiosity and not out of forced, you know what I mean? Like forced leadership, whatever that may be. No, I'm generally interested in people and why they're here and why, what do they think of this idea? Do you think it's getting, like, I'm always, I think, like, best idea always wins.
Okay, from angel to devil. How much feedback do you get from people on your leadership? How much voices do you hear from what actually happened?
Good question.
How do you know that he did?
I'm asking, like, and if I feel I don't get an honest, or you know what I mean, like, or people are avoiding it, I'm getting more specific to what I want to know. And then, I mean, it's also a matter of trusting the people that you're working with. I trust that the people that I'm working with, they will say when they don't like it. They will, and then it's still, like, we can still talk about whether we continue with it or not. But if they don't like it, I think we have the trust among us that you can always say that, whether it's about the work or about a project or about whatever. That's the only way I can do it. And I mean, of course, you never know how much of the real feedback you get.
Does it also start with self-confidence?
No, I think it really starts with curiosity, really. Like,
let me ask it differently. If you're happy with yourself, you have the confidence that if you get feedback or criticism, but you still have the feeling, okay, whatever I will experience as a feeling, it's more important that I get it to have...
Yeah, I mean, this is such a big topic because it goes, like, I studied at theater school. Mm-hmm. So I know, like, basically for me, theater school is being forced to be vulnerable in an environment that is not safe, which is the most unnatural thing to be. No, but you know what I mean? Like, you have to open up, but you don't know the environment. It's not even like Me Too shit, but just like the framework of a school. It's like, it's about vulnerability and opening up, but it's in an environment that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels super forced. You know what I mean? So I've experienced so much these forced transparencies or pretended equality in work context. Whereas I prefer, really, like, that's why I liked Bureau Batak. It was super clear, like, he's doing this, she's doing that, they're doing this. That's how it is. Of course, there can be mix and match and like there and them, but it's super transparent in what it is, rather than pretending to be transparent, but it becomes even more fluid and grayish, and therefore there's so much more space for things to go wrong. And I think, again, this is the only thing, like, I experience those things, and the only thing I do is just trust my gut, really. Like, how do I want to be, like, it's about that for me. How do I want to be approached? How do I want to receive feedback? How do I want to receive criticism? And that's what I go with, rather than I don't know, it's so multifaceted, multi-layered, and I'm also, like, I've often say jokingly, like, I'm such a bad boss, because I'm not a good boss, but I don't want to be a boss, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not interested in being a boss or a creative director, although I do want the creative responsibility. And there's a difference for me. You know what I mean? Like, being a boss or being a creative director, I don't give a shit about that. And I don't want that. I find it uncomfortable. But I want the creative responsibility and saying, how do you say it? Like, I'm super comfortable with making the decisions, the creative decisions. I love that, actually. But there's a difference in those two for me. Being uncomfortable as a boss, or, like, you know, I think that's something to do with the hierarchy that we just talked about. And I'm now thinking while I'm saying it. Like, is it also bossy to say, like, I want the full creative? Da, 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 da. That's also quite dominant, I would say. Oh, you know, I don't know.
It's okay, because what I feel is that you care a lot about others,
Yeah, definitely.
And that you like to work together and such and nurture others as a person and also their talents, probably.
Definitely.
Do you feel, well, maybe responsibility is a big word, but do you, for instance, if you look at leadership in generations before us, current, the whole new generation coming up with totally different visions and such, do you have the feeling that you want to nurture or maybe feel responsibility for next generations that you like want to share?
For sure. Like, definitely. If I have the opportunity, I love to like do a workshop at a school or something, because I think it's super important for me to like meet the new generation, and also not even from a creative point of view, but on a human level, like, what can I do better? Like, how do they interact? Like, learn from them, really. And I learned a lot already from doing those kind of like workshops or teaching or whatever, or mentorships. And of course, I do find it important, like I just said it to you before we started, like, I really do believe in sharing is caring, in the sense of like, I think maybe that is, it's about confidence. Like, I'm not interested, like, I'm not cooking a secret recipe here in this studio. Like, no, I mean, yeah, pitch in or help out or share or give back. I mean, it sounds a bit kumbaya, kumbaya, but I think it is important. I really do believe it is important to share and to, because you learn so much and I will get better from it as well. So it's a win-win, really. It's not kumbaya, it's a win-win. When you give something, you can also expect something in return for it, and not in a business kind of way, but just on an interhuman kind of level, I would say.
So if you would teach, then probably, of course, it will be about the work. What I would, for instance, like, is if you share the experience about whatever you went on mental health, because there's so much.
Yeah, I think I once did a lecture I did two lectures that I find still quite funny. Like, one was at this thing in Antwerp, and it was like big speakers, and it was a long time ago. And then I did a lecture about everything that I called myself from the moment that I started working in the creative fields until now. And like all the, about talking about, you know, insecurities, and about like, then I thought I had to be this, then I had to be this, then, yeah. And I did another lecture in Brussels. They asked me for like a creative lunch, it's called. And then, you know, you talk about your projects, and I was like, I cannot be bothered to do my resume, you know, like just Google. So then I thought I'm going to do a lecture about everything that failed in my career. So I didn't necessarily name one project, like, and then I did this, but I only talked about things that didn't work out or that failed miserably. I think I got a lot of feedback from the people that were there that, oh, it's such refreshing, but it was also so refreshing for myself to just bluntly talk about this didn't work out, or that was a very shitty collab, or it looked like this, but, you know, it went down like this. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I think, my way of sharing, also more than like, and then I did this amazing project, and then this happened. You know, like, that's only such a sliver of what it is to do the work. And I think everybody knows that. Like, everybody who's working in the same field or in different fields, they all know it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not very common to talk about it among friends or creative friends. Of course, it is. But I think failure should have a bigger spotlight.
Absolutely. So, for instance, Instagram.
Love to hate it, hate to love it.
Yeah. So, yeah. There's like tons of information that I could pull out of you. What if I would say like, hey, Dennis, it would be so great if the topics that we talked about right now, if you share that for a year on your Instagram.
Yeah.
Would that be something that you
No.
would consider?
No. Because I No. Instagram. Like,
Well, let me put it differently. So we want to reach as many people so they can move forward. With Instagram, there are quite a lot.
You can use your, I get it. You can use your platform, of course. I understand you can use your platform in order. And I think a lot of people that I know, they do it very well. It's not for me. I'm not going to pretend. I know it's not for me. I can't do it. I think Instagram, I use Instagram for the work again. Of course, there's this like sharing some curated part, I guess, from my life. But no, I thought about it, obviously. And I'm such a big follower of lots of like these types of platform sharers, or like, you know, not, I'm not influencers, but like people who actually do something with their platform, whether it's about society or art or whatever, like anything. But it's not for me. I really, it's not. I mean, I can now say it is, but it isn't. I would never do it because I would feel uncomfortable with it.
I am.
And not because, I mean, no, it's just, it's not my way. And that's fine, I guess.
Are you in a way a mentor to someone? Is there at this moment that you have someone or others that you?
Well, I just got, like last week, I had a conversation with somebody who's graduating, and she asked me to help her out throughout her graduation year. So we had one conversation, but it will, yeah, no, definitely. I will speak with her on a monthly basis. And yeah, love that.
Do you have a mentor?
I've had mentors throughout my life, I guess. And it changes from time to time. And I don't have one mentor at this point. No. Do I? No.
Why
My mother, maybe.
does it change?
I mean, I think I had the luck to meet certain people at certain moments that helped me to certain, like certain places, or evolve. Like, yeah, there were moments, yeah, there were people that helped me or were there at the right time, right place at the right time. But I'm not having like one continuous like mentor from the, but I still speak to some of the previous mentors, and yeah, I love that. Amazing. And maybe like the only constant is my mother in that sense of like, yeah, I think my mother is the closest to like a mentor. Yeah. But like I've actually quite a lot, like all of my friends, all like everybody is like all of my friends are super been like supporting and mentoring me and my husband, like, but it's not, I understand what you mean. Like, no, I don't have one mentor that I go to. I have a therapist. She's
Also,
good.
big
Yeah,
maintenance.
she's a good mentor. Yeah.
And you're also supported by two agencies, if I'm correct.
Yes.
What do they do for you? What should other
I
people
mean,
also consider doing so? Or?
what? I mean, yes. Yeah, so I work with Heat, which is a Amsterdam-based agency, but I'm not necessarily like, it's not a typical agency, in the sense of like Luke, who I'm working with, he's kind of like my producer. Like, I don't like to call him my agent. He's doing like contracts and all that stuff, but he's like way more of like my, like not private in the sense of my husband, for example, like somebody who can, I can go to and like, what do we do with the project? Is it a good idea to do this? Is it not? Like more on a business, creative business kind of point of view, like a sparring partner. So he is super fundamental for my, I already worked with him for 4 years. Like, he's very important in, like, I call him every day, basically. And then indeed, like since last year, we started with, or we signed with Management and Artists, which is a way more traditional, fashion related agency, I would say. it's interesting. Like, it's new. It's still fresh. It's still, we're still getting to know each other. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting what they can do. What do? They do super practical stuff. So like negotiating fees, negotiating hotels, that like super practical stuff. And they can help you out with meeting people, with contacts, with that kind of stuff. So that's kind of what they do, I guess. So it's, I'm not with two agencies. I have one agency and I have Luke.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I, like, Luke is not my agent. Luke is, he's part of the studio, you know? And my agent is outside of the studio. Yeah. There's a big difference for me. How I, and I also think how Luke, how he, yeah, it's, we don't have like an agent. It's a different relationship than I have with my agent from MA. Yeah. Which, I mean, yeah, makes sense.
I heard in the...
But it's a good question. I'm still in doubt about it, about agencies and about the relevance of it, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, because for...
And they know, like, I've expressed those insecurities and those concerns
with
my agent, with when I started signing with MA. Like, I think it's also something outdated in a way, especially now, like, the world is so small. If somebody wants to work with me, they'll find me. I do believe, I really believe in that. Same for me. Like, if I want to reach out to somebody, I can reach out to them. Whether they receive it or not, that's different. But, and there is this idea of, like, what I also said about my, the structure of my company in bracket. It's like owning this idea of, so I've, on the one hand, part of a collective of people they represent, which is nice, and it's creative, like-minded people. But it's also like, it also has a controlling aspect, and that's something I don't like. So it's a bit in between. Mm. And it's basically the whole kind of aspect that we just talked about freelance, owning people, company structures, hierarchy, top down. So I'm still undecided about it.
I heard you say, and my girlfriend, she laughed quite hard when she heard this one. Not because of you, but to me, because she saw so much resemblance.
Okay.
You seem to do something spontaneously seldom.
Yes. It's not, I mean, I'm getting better, but yes, that is correct, that I'm doing that.
Does it?
Very rarely.
Because when she asked me, like, shall we go to a restaurant and do this, the first answer is no.
Oh, yeah.
And then she gives me a little bit of time and says, hey, same, what a good idea. Of.
Yeah.
Is that control, insecurity? I'm still trying to figure out why this is.
I mean, I know, like, I've been in therapy. It's a long story, but basically I have an, like, uncontrollable fear of death and this idea of being forgotten. And my way of coping with that is that I thought it would be useful to control your whole life so you have the full control about everything that is happening, which is actually the opposite thing you want to strive for, because you want to live, basically. Mm-hmm. That's what you, right? You want to experience life. And with controlling everything, I learned that I dissociated from myself in it, because it became super obsessive. Like, time slots for work became time slots for friends, for dinners, for, like, visiting somebody because you're around the corner kind of thing. That wouldn't happen. Literally, for me, like, going to the gas station is tricky. It's really, I mean, you have to do it because otherwise you're... But, like, this idea of getting off the roads, like, kind of stopping your timetable moving forward it's some, I mean, it's a stupid example, but it very clearly describes how I sometimes could think. And that's something I'm now forcefully sometimes, but try to change, because it really helps me like a lot. And it's great, really, to live the other way, or like sometimes, I mean, it's a bit of both and it's not one way or another, but yeah, I gained way more space. Yeah, I think this will be the story and struggle of my life. And it's really like, it changed quite drastically because of my father's illness. My father has Alzheimer's, and with interfering with him, I'm so thankful, because he very, in the stage that he's in now with his disease, which is quite far. I mean, it's to illustrate this idea of he is not completely present in how he was anymore. But I'm so thankful that he kind of gifted me this idea of living in the now, because it's like I don't have kids, but basically kids will probably do the same. But he's, the only thing that exists for him is the now. And you cannot be in contact with him if you're not with him in the now. And I learned, I mean, it took a year and a half really to connect those dots. But now I don't know, there was a moment where I was just alone with him, which never happened. Also, when he was like ill or something, I always went with my mother or with my husband. But for some reason, I was by myself with him. And we had such a good time. And I really kind of like, how do you say it? Like framed that memory, because it was so vivid. And I can still like go back to that memory. And I was like, okay, this is what I would like to. And it slowly trickles down in life. And it's like I said, it's so weird, but I mean, it's not weird, but for me, it is super weird that by letting your control freak inside of you, letting that like go, or like be more chill with it, you gain way more time. And I mean, it sounds, I'm saying it now and I'm like, that's so fucking simple, but it, for me, it was not. It took me, like, I'm 34 now. Like, it took me a long time to figure that out.
Mm.
And the amount of extra space that I got is crazy. I said to my therapist, like, it's crazy how much, like, I feel like I'm busier than ever, like, on paper.
Mm.
But I feel I have more time than ever, which is so weird.
I fully agree.
So... And I mean, like, I will still be a little control freak. And it's also part of why I can do 8 projects at the same time. Like, that's also reality of what it's nice to be control freakish. But it should be more in balance. And I'm finding that balance now. And I love that that's happening for me. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was really nice.
That was our conversation with Dennis van der Broek. His approach reminds us of the importance of creating space for reflection and balance in our creative lives. He showed us how collaboration, passion, and a grounded personal routine are crucial to creative growth. Take Dennis' advice, create your cocoon, embrace collaboration, and keep pushing your creative boundaries. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to click the follow button, rate the podcast, subscribe to the newsletter, and spread the word, so we can continue to grow the Don't Waste Eye podcast. And remember, everyone struggles, and that's okay. But standing still prevents you from growing and reaching your potential. Keep moving forward, because the better you become, the more you'll inspire others. Don't waste your time, don't waste your eye.